Hello, welcome to Citywire Funds Fanatic, our new podcast for investors in collective investment funds. With me is Daniel Grote, editor of Citywire Funds Insider website. I'm Gavin Lumsden. I edit the Investment Trust Insider website. And we're going to be talking about the dividend cuts, the massive wave of dividend cuts that are hitting investors at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I've just got off from editing a piece that Jeremy's written for us on the likely impact on UK equity income funds. You know, there is potentially a huge impact, certainly in terms of what the banks have done in cutting dividends and, you know, what we've seen today with insurers following suit and, you know, having come under similar pressure to banks from the Prudential Regulation Authority. And, a large batch of them cutting their dividends today. Some of them not. Legal & General, the UK's largest insurer, didn't, but it has been left isolated, essentially, by its peers.
Is that going to be a problem for Legal & General, do you think? Or are they actually going to come out possibly hailed in a high regard by their investors, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you can look at it in both ways, can't you? I mean, certainly if you're looking at it as an investor, then that's a positive thing. You know, it's a positive thing that a company is able to carry on paying its dividends at a time of crisis like what we're experiencing right now. I mean, that's kind of the point of dividends, isn't it? I mean,
yeah. But the trouble is that, you know, the regulators having putting pressure on these big financial institutions, it kind of makes sense in one way, but it's in the context of hundreds of other companies also suspending their dividends or cancelling them altogether. It's a huge drop in investment income for investors, but pension funds and all sorts of things. So how do you think investors are feeling about all this?
Well, I think to a large extent, it will depend on why the companies are cancelling their dividends, because, you know, there are a sort of variety of reasons, really. You know, you look at what the banks have done, and the banks aren't cancelling their dividends in the same way that they cancelled their dividends in the financial crisis, or rather not.
They're financially stronger, aren't they, than they were in 2008?
Well, exactly. And they've come under pressure, you know, from the Bank of England to suspend them. And so I think, you know, where investors can see that, you know, this is the dividend is not coming this year, but it will resume. And there's no reason why it's not going to resume just as strongly as it was beforehand, then, you know, they can kind of look through the difficulty that we've got at the moment. I think you do need to sort of put the dividend cancellations into sort of different categories. So you have the banks and insurers where there's political pressure. And, you know, in some cases where...
Let's pause on that one, because it's just like, you know, with the banks, you know, they owe us one. We bailed them out, taxpayers did. But they didn't bail out Barclays, but they didn't bail out HSBC either. But nevertheless, you know, there is an element of that sector, you know, owes the public, the British taxpayers.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Big time. Because if Lloyds or... Royal Bank of Scotland actually gone down properly, then you know, the rest of the banking sector would have gone with them. You know, the banks are well used. We've seen this increased regulation coming their way for some time. It's the insurers that puzzle me though, because they're under financial pressure from what's happening on the stock market. But I mean, my impression is they're not under the same kind of pressure. But there's a kind of moral pressure being exerted now on all companies, it seems, to, you know, save their money because things could get really bad. And it does make sense, but you just kind of wonder, I wonder where it's all going to end up.
Well, yeah, and save your money where your customers are going to need it, you know, for insurers, you know, given the kind of claims they're likely to face because of all the disruption and you know, the lockdowns brought and, you know, the coma that the UK economy's been placed in. You know, there's some areas of insurers business where claims are going to completely dry up. You know, they're probably not going to have many car insurance claims because there's not many cars on the road, but there are other areas of its business where you know, there is going to be a spike in claims because of what's going on, and you know, the PRA and the Bank of England wants insurers to have that money to pay out those claims rather than giving out to their shareholders now.
Yeah, and also I guess shareholders are, you know, the shareholders do see the logic in that this is a suspension or an interruption. It doesn't mean it's the dividends are going away forever.
And I guess that's the point I was making, where there's the distinction between, you know, what's happening with the banks and the insurers at the moment, which are the bigger, you know, the, of the massive cuts that have happened across the in dividends across the UK stock market. Banks and insurers account for about half of that. They, you know, those have been the biggest.
What's the latest figure? Beginning of the week, last week, it was over £15 billion of dividends cut. So
yeah.
Far.
So the latest, I mean, it's difficult to stay up to date with this. The latest I'd seen was £16.8 billion, and that was kind of calculated at the end of Friday. So obviously that won't take into account what's happened today with the insurers, so that's going to go up.
Not so long ago, there were dividend forecasters saying dividends were going to grow this year in the UK, maybe not quite as much as last year or in recent years, but it was a positive outlook, and they're falling like a stone, aren't they?
Yeah, I mean, those, you know, that's one of the things about the severity of what's happened to you know, global economies and global stock markets, is that, you know, projections that were made a month ago are meaningless now.
I mean, it's amazing, isn't it? Because, you know, you compare this to the financial crisis of 2008, 2009, and dividends were cut. A lot of dividends were cut then, but nothing like the sort of universal sweeping aside of payments that we're seeing at the moment. And that just, as you say, reflects this unbelievable uncertainty. You know, where is business? Businesses aren't doing any business for the foreseeable future. So how does this affect, you know, we write about funds and investment trusts. How's it affecting the funds you're looking at?
Well, I mean, in the equity income sector, banks and insurers are, they're relied upon by a lot of managers for, you know, a hefty chunk of the income that they pay on to their investors. So, you know, it's difficult to get a sense from the managers at the moment of exactly how much they're going to have to cut the income that they're providing to their investors. Because obviously, you know, one of the big differences between the open-ended funds that I look at and the closed-ended investment trust that you look at is that, you know, funds aren't allowed to hold reserves. They can't kind of, you know, keep dividends in good years back, so that they can supplement payments in lean years. And, you know, this
they've
is
got to pay out all the dividends lean. They receive, don't they?
Yeah, as soon as it comes in, it goes out, essentially.
Which is straightforward, so, but it means that, you know, if income is down, as it's going to be a lot this year, there's going to be an immediate impact on the distribution.
Well, yeah, and it means you can be the most skillful income fund manager in the world, but given that structure, it's pretty hard to see how you'll be able to raise the dividend that you'll be paying to your investors from your fund.
Open-ended funds are coy generally, aren't they, about the dividends they pay. Obviously, they tell investors what they're paying, but we've talked about in the past, haven't we, that you know, investment trusts, they put out proper results, detailed results at half year and full years, annual reports, that sort of thing. And you can see what the dividends they are announcing this year are, how they compare with the previous year and previous years. You don't get any of that sort of disclosure. I think very little.
I mean, I'd say, you know, coy is the euphemism. It's an absolute nightmare trying to find out, you know, what the dividend history of funds is. You know, I mean, the contrast between funds and investment trusts is really marked in that sense, where, you know, you have the dividend heroes that are, you know, they're multi-decade kind of track records of growing income is celebrated and you know, widely publicized. With funds, it's really hard to find out what they paid out the last year, let alone the last sort of 50 years or whatever. So, you know, and that's been, you know, that's one of the challenges in kind of writing about this space, is that, you know, even in the equity income kind of sector, funds are, the literature they produce is all focused on total return. It's really hard to find, you know, a fund fact sheet that details, well, this is how much, you know, this is how much the capital grew and this is how much income was paid out last year. It's almost always in a total return kind of form of presentation.
But yeah, I guess a lot of, total return is a bit annoying if that's all they ever give you. But on the other hand, there are going to be a lot of investors in these funds. They're growth investors. They're reinvesting the income back into the fund, aren't they? So, but I take your point. You know, for people who are actually taking the income, it's really tough. Which are the most affected funds? Which are the funds looking most exposed, in your view?
Well, I mean, Schroder Income and Schroder Income Maximizer are probably, in terms of sort of big equity income funds, they're the ones that have the most exposure to banks. I mean, the exposure across both of those funds was about 16% at the end of February, according to Morningstar, and they've got about 4% in insurers. And there are, you know, roughly around 10 or so equity income funds that have got more than 10% of their portfolio in banks. You know, and that reflects the fact that banks, you know, unlike in the sort of early years after the financial crisis, they had, you know, been rehabilitated really as income investments. And, you know, last year they accounted for about 17% of the FTSE 100's dividend income. So, you know, it's no surprise really that banks, you know, they take up a place in the portfolios of most equity income funds. And
bank exposure that you did a story, or we had a story on J.O. Hambro, equity UK equity income. They were actually putting a number on the kind of dividend cuts from their fund up to around 40%.
You know, they've kind of stuck their head above the parapet, really, in that, they said towards the end of last month that they were, you know, looking at a 20 to 40% cut in the dividend that they're providing to their investors, you know, as a result of the dividend cuts in the stock market kind of feeding through to their fund. And they had a good income track record. They'd built their dividend. The dividend had sort of been increasing steadily over, you know, the previous decade after falling pretty markedly in the financial crisis. But, you know, it goes back to the point we were talking about at the beginning, that an open-ended fund, you know, is left with no option. You know, if the dividends dry up from its portfolio, that just feeds through to the dividend that the managers are providing for their investors drying up as well. I mean, Clive Beagles and James Lowen, they've got just under about 8% of their fund in banks. They've got quite a high weighting to insurers, although, you know, a fairly significant chunk of that is Legal & General, and L&G have said that they will be paying their dividend. So the cuts amongst banks and insurers, you know, that they're a big factor behind the, you know, the cut that they're going to have to be delivering to their investors. But in terms of the impact on their fund, and, you know, you look at the wider stock market, it's not just a financials thing. It's not just a banks and insurers thing. It's pretty hard to look at any sector on the London stock market that where companies aren't cutting dividends because of how widespread the economic impact of the coronavirus has been.
Yeah. Except there might be, this is a desperate way or crude way of going on to my patch here, but there might be one sector and cut something that will be quite so prevalent, and that might be investment trusts.
Yeah, well, I mean,
investment trusts, which actually flagged up, you know, a lot of the older ones, a lot of the UK equity income ones, which is kind of what we're focusing on at the moment, you know, built up these reserves, these what we call revenue reserves. As you said, they don't have to pay out all their investment income every year. They can hold back up to 15%. And they've done that, and they've built up these pots of money, and they can smooth out their dividends. So, but even they are under a lot of pressure. So, you know,
well, I guess it
London, which is the one with the longest dividend track record, it's grown its dividend for 53 years consecutively. And there are other so-called dividend heroes with records that are not quite that long, but not far off. Anyway, they're determined to pay their 54th this year, and have said they'll dip into the revenue reserves to achieve that.
But, well, I mean, I guess, and I'm nicking sort of a comment that you've made, but that, I mean, that really would be significant, wouldn't it? If City of London had to cut its dividend, or even if it, you know, couldn't raise it. It's the equivalent of Shell not paying.
Shell of the investment trust world. I mean, I think Shell's paid its dividend, growing dividend for even longer, a bit longer, unbroken since the Second World War, is what everyone says. But
So, and would
Yeah,
I be right that
London, run by Joe Curtis at Janus Henderson, had to cut the dividend. Yeah, it'd be huge. Because we're a long way from that. Because what analysts have been busy kind of assessing what level of cuts investment trusts could stand before, well, not only before they would dip into these reserves, before these reserves, you know, would they get wiped out? And there was some, actually, it was an interesting research from JP Morgan Cazenove. And they were looking at FTSE futures, which are apparently forecasting 59% or 60% cut, total cuts in dividends from the end of February over the next 2 years. So, you know, that's unprecedented, that word that gets used so often, but 60% dividend cuts. And so, but the good news was their conclusion was that while there would be trusts like Troy Income that would, if that happened, would actually probably use up all their revenue reserves, the good news was they could actually continue paying dividends. So, you know, if they're right, you know, and we don't know how long this crisis is going to go on for, how long this dividend drought is going to persist. But those revenue, they're going to be leaning on those revenue reserves big time if it is prolonged. But it could be that they get through it and maintain their record. So if the likes of City of London get through this and they've maintained their dividends, then they really are going to be heroes. But, but you know, because you're, as you say, your open-ended funds are going to be slashing them right, left and centre because they've got no other choice.
Well, and I guess with investment trusts, presumably, you know, when you're looking at, you know, the dividend heroes and the kind of the equity income sector and assessing how likely they are going to be to, you know, to be able to ride through this, presumably it's all about reserves. It's not like you're making any distinction between what portfolio they're running and whether that's been more subjected to cuts or not. Presumably, you know, dividends have been cut everywhere, so it's just how much do they have in terms of reserves.
It looks like it's going to be that simple. Usually, you'd look at the portfolio, what, you know, the kind of diversification they've got, their earnings per share, and you know, is it covering the dividends they're paying out? And you know, investors like to see a covered dividend, but it's great to have the reserves there in the background. But you know, even the likes of City of London and some of the other trusts with long track records of growing dividends, JP Morgan, Clever House, I think isn't far behind, Dunedin Income Growth, trusts like that, even they are going to come under some pressure. So the question is, you know, if it really is a bad, long-standing drought, you know, how far would the boards of these trusts be prepared to go to maintain these, you know, shell-like track records? Another thing is that these trusts, not only do they have, we're getting into the kind of accountancy arcanery here, but not only do they have revenue reserves, but they also have what are called capital reserves. And 6 or 7 years ago, the law was changed, and they can actually, if they get shareholders' permission, they can actually take money out for capital reserves. And that's effectively the gains they've made on investments.
Right.
So, and all of them have got big capital reserves. So if they came down to it, if they wanted to dip into those capital reserves after depleting all the revenue reserves, then, you know, they could carry on paying dividends for ages. But that would be very controversial with some shareholders, and it would then, you know, would cause a lot of debate in the sector. Because I think investors, I don't know, I think it's the same whether we're investing in funds or in trusts, like to see organic income, don't they? They like to see, you know, if you're investing in a company and it pays you a dividend, then you pass it, and you're a trust or a fund, you pass it on to your investors. That's great.
Well,
if you start,
it's not really a dividend.
That's what investors do. You see, that's what you do with your own portfolio. You can invest in the likes of Scottish Mortgage, for example, and it does pay a dividend, but it's not a big yielder. It's an out and out growth fund. You know, if you could take an income from that by just selling some shares.
Well, exactly.
Is that for you? I don't know.
Yeah, it gets to the point. If the fund or the trust is doing that, you think, well, what's the point in, you know, why am I buying an income fund? You know, when I could just, if that's all they're doing, I can do that.
Yeah. I mean, analysts do point out that the dividing line between sort of capital income, you know, it has got very blurred. For example, you know, funds have done this as well as trusts, but those with an income, you know, target are increasingly take more of their charges and expenses out of revenue. I'm sorry, out of capital. So in other words, it flatters the, it leaves as much income as possible to be paid out in dividends.